Hi everyone, I'm Megan, and welcome to Word Crash, the game show where questionable plots compete for your vote to win a place in the Word Crash Hall of Infamy. Let's meet our contestants. She's a geeky YA author, editor-in-residence at Write Hive, and belts out every song she can think of at the top of her lungs. Please welcome Justine Manzano.
Hi, everybody.
He's a songwriter nerd and author of the Wakeful Wanderer's Guide series. Please welcome back to the show, Jim Infantino.
Hello.
Well, nothing left to do but get to it. Let's play Word Crash. Break out your thesaurus and grab your red pen because it's time for Drop It. Drop a single letter from the title of a book or movie and tell us what the new plot is. Jim, what letter is getting the axe today?
It's an R, Megan. We're going to drop the R from Jane Eyre, and we end up with Jane I. And this is a story about a plucky young girl growing up in the late 1700s, early 1800s, somewhere in England, moving from orphanage to townhouse, becoming a governess, but then finding her real talent, which is as a private eye. And she begins to discover that things are not all that they seem out there in the English countryside, and shortly finds out that people are missing, people are locked away in attics. It's quite a ride.
So where do we start with this character?
Jane is growing up in an orphanage, and she notices strange things in the orphanage. She's just got a talent for uncovering the things that are covered, let's just say.
We need something that really exemplifies her aptitude at a young age. Justine, what little mystery could she have unraveled in order to show her aptitude?
Maybe she has realized that the food in the orphanage is being hoarded by some of the older kids, and she unravels the mystery behind who is hoarding the food.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Great. It really establishes a strong sense of justice in the character. So, Jim, what age is Jane when she starts her adventures?
Well, I think she probably is already a governess, maybe in a house somewhere in the English countryside, looking after a family, helping with the kids. She might be maybe 16. Is that too old for a governess?
Sounds good to me. So we're going for a very Nancy Drew-like age.
Yes, I like that. Yes.
Did you say people are disappearing?
There was definitely a person in a basement, right?
Right. I said attic. You know, I like attics. Why not something up in the rafters? I like sort of, because then you can hear them kind of clomping on the floor. That could be part of the mystery. And I'd like to think that maybe she uncovers like an international mystery. It's possible that the Lord of the Manor is making his living, keeping things up in a way even less savory than they actually did back in the day.
Are you saying we're getting into human trafficking?
Oh, I'd love that. That sounds great. Human trafficking. That would not be okay, I think. No, maybe it would be okay. I don't know.
The sentence, I would love that. Human trafficking.
Yeah. Listen, as a writer, only as a writer.
Yeah.
But maybe even worse would be the trafficking of stolen horses.
Ooh.
Thoroughbreds.
Wait, but are they in the attic?
They might be in the basement. The attic and the basement.
I feel like maybe the horse might fit better in the basement than the attic.
Yeah, or a hidden pasture. Where do you keep horses? A stable.
Maybe what's in the attic is not the horses, obviously, but maybe a witness that figured out what was happening.
Or the body of a witness.
But then it's probably not making clumping noises and skittering.
Oh, in the attic. Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah.
So it would probably have to be like a witness that our bad guy has not figured out how to deal with yet.
So Justine, who is this character? Can we give them a name? Maybe a job?
Maybe he's Johnny. Johnny from the stables.
Yeah.
What I'm hearing here is Johnny from the stables is a witness to this horse trafficking and has hidden up in the rafters to escape.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, maybe he's Jane's love interest, too, when she finds him.
Ooh, romantic subplot, huh?
Mm-hmm. Maybe he's in his teens. I mean, he's working in the stables. He's not like, you know, he's probably like the stable boy who helps out and cleans up after the horses.
Or a jockey, Johnny the jockey. Did they have jockeys back then? They must have. Somebody had to ride the horses.
Absolutely. Maybe the Lord is stealing these thoroughbreds to race them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Jane's really about to uncover a lot.
Let's flesh out that scene where they meet.
So Johnny's in the attic. Johnny drops a teacup because he's been sneaking down at night to get something to eat. And he's made a pot of tea somehow in the attic. And he drops a teacup and she hears it and she goes up to the attic and she sees Johnny. And there he is and he spills the beans that he witnessed the lord of the house bringing in stolen horses. The lord set his henchmen on him and he escaped, but couldn't go out over the open countryside, so he had to end up hiding in the attic. And now they have a doozy of a problem on their hands because they have to figure out what to do, who to tell.
How do they know they can trust Jane? I mean, how does he know, Johnny, that he can trust Jane?
And how does Jane know she can trust Johnny?
Good question.
But they start working together.
They start working together probably because they're the same age. Neither one really is in a position of power.
True.
We're going to have to do this together. Well, I don't trust you. Well, I don't trust you.
Oh.
So they start working together. What's their big clue?
A different design of horseshoe that she sees in the stables, but no horse to which it fits, which makes her think there must be another horse in another stable or elsewhere. And that's eventually how she discovers the secret stable.
Okay, Justine, where is the secret stable located?
The secret stable is at the edge of their land, but neighboring the co-conspirators' land area. So it is two people who are working together, two lords who are working together and using their shared land space to hide the secret stable.
I think there's got to be some kind of geographic feature that keeps this stable secret.
It could be a moor. Couldn't it? There has to be a moor, I think. There, it could be on the edge of a moor with a giant weeping willow.
Ooh.
That keeps part of it concealed. It's run down. And this moor is common property, or it's deeded to a fallen lord who no longer owns any property, but they've left it that way since medieval times for just these sort of shifty purposes, so that if it's discovered, it's not either of their problem.
We have the two heroes established. Who's the personification of the bad guy? We know the lord is doing all this, but he needs a minion to actually do the dirty work.
You mean actually going out and stealing the horses?
How about we make this guy the illegitimate brother or illegitimate cousin of the lord? Something embarrassing that people want to hide.
Yeah, I like this. Maybe by marriage, but going like back hundreds of years related to both families, because they are the many times removed offspring and would be the heir to this land that was that fell out of deed and became commonly owned by the other two lords. And so there's a motivation to want to seek revenge on both the families, to reclaim their rightful land that's been gradually usurped by these two bad horse traders.
So will he be double-crossing them?
Double-crossing, eventually, I think. And I think Jane would find this out and draw the logical conclusion, looking in the old books in the library and realizing that this mustachioed Scottish gentleman is actually pre-William of Orange deed holder to this bit of land and is planning to bring their entire clan down to take over the area and make everyone wear kilts and play bagpipes.
And whatever other horrors they can visit upon these people.
Haggis.
Haggis, oh my. I think that would be why they were creating this criminal enterprise. Like, they were helping with this criminal enterprise. Because once they can turn around and prove it, that would make both the people who have wronged him in the past, right?
Mm-hmm.
It would make them lose their standing. And so they'd be better able to move in and bring the haggis.
Yeah, maybe. And maybe they call this person Gowan, but their name is actually McGowan. And I don't know whether that's Irish or Scottish, but I'm just rolling here. His plan is to send both of the other two lords to prison by involving them in a criminal enterprise whereby they are stealing horses.
And perhaps he intends to come off as an innocent victim
That's right.
Like they was brought in. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is getting wonderfully convoluted. Jane finds all this out, and now it's time to wrap it up.
Yes.
Who gets told? Who goes to jail? And maybe, who gets away with something?
Well, I think the two lords do end up getting away with what they've been doing. The magistrate might come out and say, you know, someone's going to have to hang for this. And they, of course, then they end up hanging the Scotsman. Because it's that kind of novel.
I feel like Jane would be very upset by that ending. She would be unsettled.
Hmm.
Especially as somebody who likes to right wrongs.
That's right. Well, there's no writing this wrong, because unless both lords and the McGowan guy, unless she feels ultimately that he really does deserve all that, you know, the land that was lost to his family.
I kind of like the idea that justice isn't done. This could be an origin story.
Mm-hmm.
She sees that despite her best effort, despite being clever, despite having evidence and bringing it to the people in charge, that these lords are untouchable. So she quits her governess job, and she moves to the city, and dedicates herself to bringing people to justice, in the hopes that someday she'll find some way to bring these powerful men to heel, and prove that there's nobody above the law.
Because she's a woman, she can't become a detective. Maybe she has like a front man, jockey, Johnny the Jockey, to become the detective. I guess some years would have to pass, so they're both old enough to hang their shingle in the town, and then she ends up solving the crimes, and he ends up acting like Sherlock Holmes.
I love this. It turns into she's the brains and he's the face.
Yep. Yep. A handsome young man who figures out who stole your dog.
But the whole time it's truly Jane.
It's really Jane.
I love it. Jane Eye. That's fantastic. This is compelling. Like, this could be written.
I was going to say, I do you want to write this, Jim?
Not really my style, but...
Now it's time for Secret Sauce, where our contestants share a tip or trick they use to keep the creative juices flowing. Jim, what do you have for us today?
Sure. The problem that I always have when I approach the page is that it's so daunting to try to write something good. And I think I end up with these false ideas about what good is. Good is the opposite of simple and declarative. And my secret sauce really is to just be as simple and stupid in my writing as possible, in that so long as I've imagined the situation, first I need to sit and imagine the situation well. Then when I approach the writing, just write as dumb as possible. Take all the style out. No, zero style. Just the shortest, simplest, most declarative descriptions of what's simply going on. And then come back later and see if we need to like put in like a fir tree somewhere, or, you know, what is the road paved with, or did I leave out what the birds were doing? But, you know, in the meantime, what I've got is the action. And I have fewer adverbs that way. I have fewer unnecessary adjectives. I'm not trying to sound flowery or good. I'm just saying what's actually happening. So it's a bit Hemingway-esque, but, you know, I'm not shooting anybody or getting drunk all the time.
It's a good one.
I think it's a great tip to not shoot anybody if you're an author.
Usually, yeah.
And no bullfights. I just don't go to bullfights in between chapters.
That is really interesting advice, yeah. And very particular.
Yeah, and I do. I mean, it's one great way to check on whether you've gone off the rails in terms of too much description or just too awkward language. Before too many chapters go by, run them through a speech bot like Speechify. Some of them are really good at reading back what you've written, and you can really hear it. If you've kind of decided to take on style that you don't want or just too much, You can really hear it right away if you check on that and not just rely on your own reading, because as we know, when we read our own stuff, we fix it as we read it. So actually hearing a voice read it aloud, a robot voice, but a pretty good robot voice, can be very helpful.
And for those who didn't catch it the first time, what's the name of the app that you used?
Speechify. That's one. I know there are several now, but Speechify is like a Chrome plugin that you can use.
Oh, fantastic. Great tip then.
I agree wholeheartedly, because I feel like those details can be added after. And the most important thing is to move the story forward so that, especially when you're stuck on a scene, you just have to keep pushing through. And so having that simple way of telling it, if you need to spruce it later, you can always go back. That's what edits are for. But you can get through that scene so you can keep writing and not stall yourself.
I've had people say that if you're stuck, you could even just put in brackets, "they get there," mm-hmm. and then move on.
Something happens here.
Something happens here. People get mad. Let's move on. And then go back later. I haven't tried that yet. I'm hesitant to do that. It feels scary, but that probably means I should try it at least once.
I definitely like the idea. I don't put that in. I haven't done that yet. I do it in outlining, but never like when I'm trying to figure out scenes and place them. Sometimes I won't explain how things happen. I'll just be like, this happens, I'll get back to it. But never in like actual drafting. But I do definitely do the simplistic scene where I'll like just sort of breeze through something that could go in deeper, and then sort of figure that out when I'm ready. Because if not, I'll be sitting there looking at it, trying to perfect it for days of writing time. So rather than do that, I'd rather breeze through and just keep going so I can get the words down.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm always going back and forth in terms of, do I kind of tough it out? I like to finish a chapter. I don't like to leave too much out. And if I do, I don't put any notes. I just play it back or read it back and see if it's necessary. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes literally they just get there. Nothing else happened and they arrived in the evening. The completion of a chapter seems important to me before I move on to the next action, because I really don't have a pantser. I don't really know what's going to happen. I have to write it first.
Justine, what's your tip or trick today?
Well, I'm big on character, and I have a tendency to write ensemble casts. So when I am trying to figure out, because usually when I go into a project, I know the main character pretty well. I figured them out. I figured out their journey. Usually I know the antagonist pretty well. It's the other characters that are going to be traveling or working with the protagonist that I tend to need a little more time to develop. And my trick for that I've been using, it's a little random, it's a little weird, but I roll a die and give everybody numbers, and whoever I get, I'll pick two for my numbers, and I will put them in a scene together. I keep a collection of writing prompts, and I'll just assign them something to do, and I'll write it. Give myself like a 10-minute free write of these two people, whether likely or unlikely, sitting in a room together and figure out their dynamic. And usually that'll teach you a lot about what their dynamic will be with other characters too. That helps me build my cast and figure out who I need and what their relationship is with the other characters in the space. So yeah, that's my big tip. It's a little like weird and random, but I feel like when you go through every character that you're having trouble with and just put them in the room with the main character, put them in the room with the antagonist, figure out, do they like to do dishes? Which is actually a thing that I ended up keeping in a story once, because I had a running joke that came from one of these about the fact that one of them kept getting stuck on dish duty. and it became a running gag throughout, and how much he hated it. It just drives how the characters move in the space with each other. And it's also fun. Sometimes you get like really interesting gems out of it, or dialogue bits, things like that. So it's a lot of fun. I like doing it. And I think it helps. And I also feel like in my ensemble cast, and maybe this is just the way I write, just everyone always argues. There's no one's ever really comfortable with any of the decisions that are made, and they have to make their opinions known. And so I do end up, those things end up cropping up. So there's never an easy path. There's always like three of them that are like, yeah, we should do this. And then two of them that are like, that is not a good idea. What are you thinking? Because it makes for fun conflict, and we like conflict.
We do. And none of us have perfect relationships, right? You get a bunch of people in a group. None of us are like, yes, we're doing this. And then you all do it and that's it. And you're all on the same wavelength. No, that never happens.
I mean, have you ever tried to plan a meeting with like five of your friends? How does that ever go?
Exactly.
Which restaurant do you want? No, I hate that restaurant. What kind of food do you want? No, I never eat that. No spicy food. So if you have five people in a room and a book, I feel like they should be doing that too. It should never be an easy path.
Strap in and get ready for the jump to light speed. It's time for In Space. In this game, we ask our contestants to add In Space to the end of any book or movie and tell us what the new plot is. Justine, what are you launching into orbit today?
I am launching the Three Little Pigs in Space. Three porcine humanoid aliens lose their homeworld to a disastrous space storm and struggle to find new planets that can withstand the strength of this storm, which is nicknamed Grand Mal Lupo.
They're fleeing the Grand Mal Lupo, which destroys whole planets.
Yes.
I see. Do these three little piggies have names?
I want to get really silly with it. Like, I want to be like Winky. But no, maybe they shouldn't. Maybe they should just like have really generic names like Bob. I don't know. What do you think, Jim?
What's your opinion? For the pigs? I think as ordinary names, maybe as ordinary as possible. Brian, Keith, and Chipmunk.
Chipmunk. Yes.
Chipmunk the pig.
I think that's incredible.
We need to establish some things. I think we need to establish the technology level of these pigs, right? How are they traveling from planet to planet?
I think they have a very modest spaceship. We're talking like beaten up, just barely, kind of barely functioning little rinky dink spaceship. I'm trying to think of like a crop duster equivalent.
Oh, okay.
They're just barely getting by.
Do we have a engineering type pig and a space jock pig?
Chipmunk is just obviously the engineering one. I mean, it's in the name, I think. Keith will be our pilot. And why am I blanking on the other name?
Brian,
yeah. Yes. I think Brian's our medical pig. Yes, to take care of the hurts and make sure that they don't pick up any bad germs from, you know, other worlds and stuff like that. So he's our doctor.
Does he say, I'm a pig, not a bricklayer?
I think he should.
Chipmunk.
Definitely. No, well, would Chipmunk say that? Or I don't know. But I think definitely someone should.
This is probably going to degenerate into Planet of the Hats. But what's the first planet that they find?
I think they should obviously, it should fall in line with our Three Little Pigs story, right?
So there would be what? You're saying that there'd be a straw planet,
yeah,
a wood planet, and a brick planet?
Yeah.
How do we make a straw planet?
We are going to make a planet that is almost entirely a gas planet. Hmm. That can't withstand a giant space storm, right? Like, it'll just blow away.
Yeah.
How do they live here? They're going to go there. There's going to be no place to land.
Well, the engineer, our chipmunk, is going to try to build something from the pieces that they have collected in their ship. Something that will sit in the gravity well and will be able to withstand the atmosphere. So he will try to construct something and they'll try to live in it for a short period of time. But then Grand Mal Lupo comes and blows away their atmosphere and they have to take off in their spaceship again and go to their next planet.
It could have had a weak magnetic field, because that is actually part of what keeps an atmosphere. Mars doesn't have a molten core, so it doesn't have much atmosphere because it keeps blowing away from the solar wind. I learned that recently.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you learned that, because that adds so much more credence to my plan.
Magnetic field.
And the gas giant and having to build some kind of sanctuary there out of what they have makes me think that these three pigs are driving some kind of garbage scow. It's a kind of, you know, large ship that just has all kinds of scrap metal and pieces. Like, maybe that's what they were doing. They would haul garbage and scrap metal and recycling. And they just happened to be the ones that survived their planet.
Exactly. They were off world at the time. They were scouting for, you know, scrap metal to bring back to help reinforce some of the homes when the storm hit. But the storm trajectory had hit early. And now they have all this stuff, but they cannot help their home planet. So they must find a new place to settle.
Jim, after this first disaster, the three pigs get into an argument about where to go next. Who wins that argument?
Well, I mean, the engineer would obviously say, well, listen, the magnetic field was Fakakta, so just because he likes to say Fakakta. And,
again, a chipmunk thing to say.
And this is not a Vulcan pig. This is, even though we are modeling a little bit on Star Trek here, the doctor would say, well, the problem was clearly the gas. The pilot would say, let's just find another planet. Then they argue about what they're actually looking for. How can they improve their situation? Do they need a stronger magnetic field? Will that help? Because the solar storm that's following them is quite powerful. And it may not, you know, may not matter. Maybe they need underground caves.
I think the doctor might say, what we need is a planet with a lot of trees because that will absorb this wind. Mm. The more trees, the better. Can we find a place with the most life and the most trees? Because I think that's what a doctor would be obsessed with, right?
Like
the mechanic was obsessed with building something, and the most epic thing that they could build would be this, you know, this giant habitat floating around a gas giant, right? Because that's all constructed. Then we have the doctor. They want all kinds of place teeming with life. So the second planet is a forest planet, like Kashyyyk or Endor.
And that is why he needs supplies to help create medicines in case something goes wrong. If they're really going to restart a population, maybe give other people a place to go to. Well, if they're going to start a civilization on a planet, they need things to make medicine with, things to, you know, eat, things, you know, all of these things, like, so that they don't have to eat rations forever. So that is exactly why he would pick a place that is teeming with life. However, it doesn't work. And our storm blows away all the trees and just completely destroys everything they build there, and they have to go again.
And I think it's important for this one to have worked slightly better. So while it's blown over all the trees, it's not like the world has been destroyed. It's just they can't live there anymore.
Right.
Because, you know, they had to escape, and the planet wasn't destroyed, but everything was blown down, and certainly things will grow back eventually. Right, but not in time for them.
And maybe to make it a little less tragic, maybe the doctor decides it wasn't that bad. They can't endanger all the life on the planet just to, you know, protect their own skins.
But this kind of insinuates that the storm is following them in particular. And so why is it following them in particular?
Something they picked up on their trash collection is drawing the storm to them. Perhaps, I'm trying to think of what it could be, though. Now I'm sort of wishing I researched, like, the science of storms and how they form. And I didn't really do that. So, it could be a...
This is science fiction.
I was about to
say, the fiction is the important part.
It could be that the storm is not a storm at all. The storm is actually a being that has the characteristics of a storm. But at the center of the storm, there is a living being that has been thrown into disarray because of something that the three pigs have taken from him in their garbage collection.
An egg.
So, their baby.
A space storm egg.
Ah, so where do these three pigs take the space egg for the last time?
I like Jim's idea about underground caves. I think they figure, okay, well, if we're in the Earth of the planet, we'll be safer. However, space storm still comes, and not only does it still come, but now it's really getting mad that it's had to follow them the whole time, and lands on the planet directly. and goes looking for its egg.
So if they're going to go underground anyways, and they know that atmospheres can be destroyed and plants can be destroyed, I think they should find a barren moon. Because it would be completely rock.
Yes. They must already know that the storm is following them. And that's why they leave. They realize that and they go, we can't endanger all this life here. We have to find a place to go where this thing can follow us and not hurt anything. So that's why they choose this barren moon.
In the vastness of the universe, this thing has taken out their planet, a second planet, and had visited them on a third planet. That's totally not reasonable to expect the random chances of the universe to do this.
Yeah.
They think they're being hunted. So they hunker down on this world. You know, they fly their ship into a cave somewhere underneath. Like, they are 100% committed to being down here. What does this final confrontation look like?
And I feel like the doctor will tell the others about the odds that this thing could possibly be following them. And then the pilot will say, don't tell me the odds, just because it has to happen. Sorry, I went off base there. The final confrontation would involve the storm actually attempting to get into the cave. And the bee. So they're just now throwing out things that they have out of the cave to try to see if any of them attract the storm. And they actually end up drawing the storm to them. Maybe there are several entrances to the cave. So they're like running through the cave and they're just sort of tossing out debris, trying to figure out what it is the thing's after. And one particular rock they throw out of one entrance actually draws the storm near them. And so they realize that that is the thing that the storm wants. The bravest little pig, which I think would be the pilot, mm-hmm. will walk the debris out to the storm and lets them know that if they want this, they can take it. And that's when you discover that it's the egg. It's the storm baby. Because when it gets to its mama, it hatches.
Right. And then they storm off.
Ha!
into the galaxy.
Perfect.
And the pigs are like, let's get off this awful moon.
And they go back to the forest planet.
Yep.
Right. Because now they know the forest planet can be safe and they can help rebuild.
Do we have a name for this new adventure?
Well, it's been taken.
Yeah.
What's funny about that is that I have run this particular game 3 times and twice people have used pigs in space. They've put pigs in space. This is a generational thing for us, right? Because people hear in space and they're just like, pigs in space, right?
It's so funny. I didn't even think about that, but that's hilarious.
Pretty foundational for a lot of us, I think.
That's so funny.
So what else can we do for a title?
I'm trying to think of something with the appropriate gravity for this.
It was a little more serious than I was anticipating.
Yeah, there was guilt at having the storm visit all these planets and destroy it. But then everything I'm coming up with is really cheesy. So it doesn't really do well there. Maybe we'll just call it by the storm's name, Grandma Lupo.
Oh, Grandma Lupo. Yeah. Name it after the wolf.
That's her title, you think?
Wait a minute. I don't know many languages, but that sounds like Big Bad Wolf to me.
It does. Wow, where did we come up with that?
I get you. I'm a little slow, but I get you. Before we go, it's time to give our authors a chance to talk about what's new and exciting in their lives. Jim, what's new and exciting in your life?
Well, I have finished my second book in the Wakeful Wanderer's Guide series, and I'm working on the third book. Third books are tricky. There's a lot riding on them, especially when you really don't have an outline. I would say that I have an outline for the three-book series, more so than I have for the individual books, so I know generally where things are going. But I am in the throes of trying to put it all together, and there are a lot of threads to tie up. And I will tie them up because I really can't stand it when authors don't do that. At the same time, I'm writing a book of short stories that is based in the same world. In the Wakeful Wanderer's world, there's these technologically upgraded people that can think to each other with a kind of an implanted telepathy device, and it changes a lot of things in their culture. So these would be stories about people who do the same thing and live in the same culture or live outside of the culture and either want to join or hate the what's called the interconnected. So that book is going to be called the Interconnected Stories, and I'm working my way through that at the same time as I'm writing book three, and I have a book about a strange sort of space travel called The Paradox Principle, and I'm working on finishing that up as well. So I have three different things that I'm trying to write at the same time, and that makes me busy and a little scattered.
But the second book in the Wakeful Wanderer's Guide, is that available right now?
It is. It's available at wakefulwanderer.com. It's also available at Amazon, iBooks, Nook, you know, all the huge. And I will be releasing an audiobook for the first book. So that's lagging. But for the Wakeful Wanderer's Guide to New England and Beyond, which is book one, I will have an audiobook out as soon as I finish editing it with the studio producer, the studio engineer. We should have it out on Audible and also independently on wakefulwanderer.com within a month or two. And I read it.
I think everyone listening here will understand that your voice is pretty much perfect for audiobooks.
Thank you.
I am looking forward to that.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Also, congratulations on the audiobook. That's a big step. I have someone currently recording my book as an audiobook. I hope to publish that soon.
Excellent.
But also, congratulations on your second book. This is a super exciting time. It's great to see people continuing to produce and realizing their vision. Also, I would like to shame Chris Claremont, who wrote a lot of X-Men comic books, who had a whole bunch of threads and never tied any of them up.
Oh, no.
So when you're like, I need to tie up all the threads, I appreciate that so much, because one of my favorite authors just never tied them up.
That's usually caused by deadlines, I think. And being an indie, luckily, I have none.
Oh, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
I don't have any deadlines either.
That and the publisher looming and deciding what you write in your stories, I think, also affects it.
Yeah.
Especially in comic books.
And where can people find you on the internet?
I'm at Jim Infantino on Twitter, Jim Infantino on Facebook, jiminfantino.com, bigego.com, and wakefulwanderer.com. So a bunch of different places.
Justine, what's new and exciting in your life?
It's actually funny because a lot of it mirrors what Jim said. So I have just completed book two. I am just publishing book two, the Keys and Guardians series. Book one was The Order of the Key. It is about a comic book loving geeky teen. She finds out that she has her own hidden abilities that her family has been keeping from her. And she ends up joining a group of people like her. They have special abilities and they fight these interdimensional creatures that come through rifts into our world. She thinks she's done something great in joining them and now she's going to be a superhero, and then realizes that the entire organization is corrupt.
I like the idea that interdimensional beings are a distraction and the real problem is the corruption. Yeah, that would definitely pull me in. Because I love going one way and then turning.
Book one has now been re-released at a sale price, so it can be picked up for about 99 cents, I believe, right now. And then we have The Skeleton Key, which is coming out in April. I also have started writing book three, which is called Keys of the Dawn. As Jim said, it is so hard for that final book to make sure you wrap everything up and make it fit and make everything work and, you know, in the proper way. So that is my current struggle. I am a plotter, so I am currently outlining, but I'm supposed to start writing next month. So that's going to be exciting. And I'm also collecting some short stories that I've written on the side. I'm telling you, we were like mirror images here that take place in that world, including a prequel story that takes place with Jacqueline's parents and why she wasn't born into the group like everyone else. So there's that. And I have another book that is outside of the series that I have released in the past called Never Say Never, which is a YA romantic comedy that just got an audiobook.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. All of that is available pretty much everywhere you buy books. The audiobook is actually Audible exclusive. I did not narrate mine because I used to do that, and it is really a toil. So I can imagine I give you points for narrating your own. But yeah, so that those are out. And then on top of that, the other thing I'm working on currently is I am the outreach coordinator / editor in residence / board member of Write Hive, which is a writing community for everybody. We give free resources for people who are unable to access writing classes and things like that. And we are actually throwing our free writing conference in June. So we have been working on like building panels and all of that. So in June, you can join us if you want to look into the programs we offer. It's at writehive.org. I can be found at justinemanzano.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram as Justine_Manzano and on Facebook as Justine Manzano Author.
Yeah, Write Hive is great. I met Justine on Write Hive. Bharath Krishnan is a person who invited me. He appeared on the show before, did a great job also. So a number of really great people at Write Hive. And I would suggest anyone who's interested in writing, especially those who are just starting off, go meet some people and talk. It seems like a nice supportive place.
It really is a great community. We make sure that the community is welcoming and that we try to offer any help. I have actually what we call a cafe table, which is the editor's corner, where I send off some writing advice to people as they come up with questions. They pop in and ask. And it really is a great way to meet people and get some elaboration on some little things, like these little things that you wouldn't hire an editor for, but you're stuck. Try to help in any way I can. So it's, and there's another editor in residence, Hannah Cates, that also does that. So it's a lot of fun. And I love interacting with the community that way.
So which pitch deserves a place in the Word Crash Hall of Infamy? Was it the detective governess, Jane Eye, or the three little pigs in space? You tell us, tweet us at Word Crash Game and vote for your favorite story of the night. If you're listening on YouTube, remember to like and subscribe and get in those comments and tell us how you would tackle our questions today. Everything we talked about will be in the links below. Thank you for listening. I'm Megan, and this has been Word Crash, reminding you to always get creative.